My name is Grant Vermeer, a member of the Crown Refs community. My first year as a high school official, that's when I found out about the Crown Refs community. Having my military background, I love being a part of teams. I want to be a part of a group that has high standards, that holds each other accountable, but also supports and loves each other, and has a desire for everyone in the group to grow. If you're a young referee or someone who loves refereeing and wants to be a part of a group, this is an amazing community for you. I feel like I've gotten better as an official. I've had a community and friends and support through this process, which can otherwise be a little bit lonely as you're on the road a lot. The culture is amazing in here. Make sure to come check it out.
Serve the game.
Thank you for listening to the Crown Refs Podcast, the audio experience for basketball officials. Serve the game.
I started Crown Refs to impact officials, but kind of early on, I knew it had the legs to potentially, you know, help fans, help players, help coaches, and now, as of late, it really feels like that's what we're doing too. So it's nice to be here with you now and work with you on this project.
Thank you.
So how can I be of assistance, of value? I know you sent me a little bit about the book, and that's where I said, you know, I really connect with what you're doing, and yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, so, you know, what we're trying to do with this book is make something practical that players and coaches can use together in order to improve team performance beyond the techniques and the tactics. And, you know, one of the, you know, among a number of different areas, you know, what is great performance as a team? What does great teaming and leadership look like? What are some of the psychological and emotional management skills we need to have as players and coaches in order to do well in the game? But another part of it is dealing with referees. And part of this comes out of my own experience working with coaches and athletes. But also it's coming out of interest in the game, like the rate at which we're losing referees. My wife, for example, you know, she was a basketball referee for a short time. Oh, wow. And she said, I just can't take the parents. I'm out. And she chose not to continue. So as we're writing this book, we have at least one, if not a couple of chapters that we're planning to devote to the question, how do we effectively work with referees? How do we effectively respond to referees? And so what I wanted to do is find out from you, you know, in this whole world where people are behaving badly, who are the positive deviants doing it well, doing the right things, so that we can pass that on to players and coaches and, you know, get them to not just imitate and do what those really good actors are doing, but that they come up with their own strategies for how to, you know, how to work with it well and in the process better the game. So, you know, for starters, you know, I would ask, you know, what is it, you know, when you think of athletes first, what do the best athletes do? Like if you had in basketball 10 players on the court and probably on the bench extended who like act like in a perfect way, that it's like the model game, what are some of the things that would be happening? How do they approach it, do you think?
Now you're asking me from a referee's perspective, from what
yes.
I see?
Absolutely. Okay.
The best players, and here's one thing about me, is I do not pay too deep attention on the talent levels, on their overall performance, because officiating is so hard for me. I can't allow, I don't have any emotional space for that. I don't think it translates for me getting the plays right.
Yeah.
But what I do observe is about the best players with regards to officiating, you're saying, or with regards to them being like,
so
I just
you
want
as
to help
an,
you as much as I can.
Yeah. Yeah. So thinking about, you know, in games where as an official, you said, you know, here I've noticed in the behavior of these players, in how they approach the game with respect to the rules and the refs and how they respond to a call going for or against them. You know, what do you notice among the players who are doing it right, first of all?
Let me just give you a quick background on me. This is, you know, this is coming from a player. You know, I played Division III ball for a year, so that it is what it is. I was nothing special. But I never said a word to the officials. I never thought about the refs. The only time I would think about the refs is maybe when some of my friends were making fun of a ref. That 10 seconds of time I would pay attention to, oh, okay. So, but I didn't have that many opinions about officials. So I know the right answer to this question. And it's very clear to me how a player should be dealing with referees. It's actually simple, and it's a big unlock. And players should pay zero attention to the referees. Zero attention to the calls. Instant adaptation and next play mentality. Zero acknowledgement of a call, of something not going their way. They're just next. And the great ones can have that emotional space to now be aware that they need to pull up some of their teammates who don't have those capabilities. So that's even some next level. Okay, he does it himself. That's great, but he's helping us out because he's immediate with, guys, get back on defense. Or, you know, sometimes they'll curse at him like, yo, shut up. You know, shut the F up. Don't talk to the refs. But just overall, this is for play. You know, I'll stay with players because you asked me players, but next play mentality. So that I want to let you know that's number one and number two. We need to hammer that home as the unlock on how to deal with referees. If you can get there, you're going to be in a great, great spot. Number three is, okay, if you're going to communicate with the ref, only time you should be communicating with the ref is if you want to fact find information that can help you. Not to question their call, but to ask a legit question because they want to learn. Hey, ref, that could come in the form of, and now you got to know when to approach the ref. Now there's a time to this. It's not immediate. They're not available a lot, most of the time. We're not available most of the time, you know, but you have to understand when we are. Okay. Free throws could be a time, timeouts, obviously. And you got to pick your spots. Could be a dead ball opportunity. But number one and number two is don't go up to the ref. Number three is if you really want to know because you want to get better and learn, that's great. We're here to help. So go up to the ref at when they have time. And you just got called for a block or whatever. Hey, ref, I thought I was, in a good position. What did I do wrong there? Could you tell me what I did wrong? Great. That's amazing stuff. That's how we build together. Yeah. That's how we make the game better. We always welcome those conversations for players and coaches. So that's one, two, and three for me. Anything?
Yeah, one of my co-authors, David, has worked with the Great Britain wheelchair rugby team, which won a world championship not long ago. And there's a player on that team, his name is Jim, who was a student of the game, student of the rules, in fact, served on like an international rules committee. And he took the approach exactly as you described. He always worked with a smile on his face. And he had this keen interest in getting to the nuances of things and always trying to make the game better and more entertaining. And if the ref would, you know, agree with him, he'd say, hey, I can't change the call. As we know, there's no instant replay in wheelchair rugby, but I'll keep an eye on it. But good catch. We agree on that, but I'm not going to change it. And in other cases where, you know, it would work against him or he wouldn't get what he had hoped for, he'd say, okay, thanks for listening. He'd smile and he'd wheel away, right? But he always left it in a positive place. So I think that is probably an example, if I'm reading it right, that really fits that, right? Let's explore what the rules really say and let's try to learn together.
This episode of the Crown Refs podcast is brought to you by RefereeStore.com. To save 15% on all United Attire products, enter CROWN15 at checkout. We hope you enjoy this episode and do us one last favor before you listen. Have a great rest of your day.
We're all here. these are the same rates the coaches are teaching the players too. So we have to make sure we do that for the officiating department too. And I think there just needs more overall education on that. So that's why I'm glad that you're doing what you're doing.
Yeah, so let me pivot to coaches for a second. So one of the things is I have talked with some coaches on this, and again, I'll bring in another example from my other co-author, Jay. You know, he's a rugby guy. And so when he would coach his youth rugby teams, he would go to the referee before the game and say, hey, is there anything you want me to share with my players before we get started? And he would find out if the referees were, you know, maybe told to focus on some certain things that they've been noticing in recent games. And then he'd say, hey, here's our style of play. Here's what we've been working on lately. So one of his things, for example, was lightning fast rugby. But that requires that the referees keep a keen eye on offside, right? So that they didn't get it working against them. And so we'd ask the ref, hey, can you keep an eye on this for us? And the refs would usually say, yeah, absolutely. And he said, hey, can we get back together at halftime? Let me know if you see anything that our guys need to be working on so that I can pass that along to them. And then, of course, he'd talk to his own players and say, hey, here's the conversation I had, and here's how I'm working on your behalf, but also what the refs are going to be watching toward. When I talk with coaches about taking that approach, some are reluctant because they're concerned about seeming overly manipulative, right? What's that razor's edge between giving a fair, you know, directing attention in a fair way versus seeming that I'm trying to create an unfair advantage for my own team? How do you see that?
This is a great, great topic. It's something I've been thinking a lot about lately. When coaches ask you to watch for things, and that can come in various tones. They could be shouting that at you, or in a respectful way, hey, could you just watch for this player or this and that? But just flip that around. You know, would a ref ever go up to a coach and say, hey, could you guys run the 2-1-2 press, full court press, and also get more jump shots for number 22? Maybe think about getting number 17 more playing time. It sounds crazy if you flip it.
Sure.
So it's just not a fair thing to say. It's not something I would recommend coaches, you know, embarking on, because we have to stick to our rules in the game.
Sure.
Now, I understand if we're fact finding, again, if we're building, if we're trying to learn, then that's all great. But, you know, when coach asked me, hey, can you watch number 10, you know, I think he's pushing, hey, coach, I'm watching number 10 and all other 9 players. So that's where I'm going with this new conversation versus just, yeah, coach, we'll watch for it. Because what he's doing is putting in a pre-order or an order, like, you know, he's at a buffet and he's got a menu. Hey, can I have a, you know, hand check over here? Like, what are we doing? You know, what are we doing there? So that's just my perspective on it.
Yeah. So, you know, in your experience, is that never ever helpful or a useful exchange? You know, because I think if it's positioned in my mind, and I've been a referee myself in soccer, not in basketball. But if a coach approached me, let's say, as a referee and said, hey, here's our style of play. In previous games, here's what we've noticed. You know, how do you see this rule applying here? Okay, great. Then that's how I'll coach my players, or I'll let them know that that you'll be watching for. I think that kind of dialogue can be useful. Yeah. For me as a referee, if a coach ever approached me, I'd be appreciative, because I think there often is this maybe artificial distance between referees, coaches, where there could be a closer relationship and in the process work much better. You know, I listened to a couple of your podcasts recently, and I can't remember it was the head of referees for the NCAA, right? And he actually talked about how the warm relationships you had with guys like Izzo and others, right? And so that, you know, that fabric can kind of develop, you know, if there is that respect.
And I think the key to getting your point across in anything is effective and respectful communication. So you can get all these things done as a coach if you aspire to these conversations. as long as you do it in a kind and respectful way, you're going to be able to go deep with that official. So I'm open to mostly every conversation in a respectful, kind way, you know, but we as officials get a lot of verbal abuse. So I've built a bit of a space for myself, a professional space where we could stay in. Like when you said, hey, previous games, it's getting called like this. I immediately said, well, we can only speak about this game and right now and where we're at. And I can't learn anything about your season. I respectfully don't want to know about your season.
Yep.
You know, so, but if you're doing it in a way to learn how it's going to be called, to answer that question specifically, I would just go give you a rule-based explanation. How is this play going to be called? Like, how is this illegal screen going to be called? Well, the screener needs to be stationary. He needs to be vertical. He can't initiate illegal contact. So I would just keep it rule-based and helpful and simple that way.
Perfect. How about the coaches? You know, one of the things I'm curious about, just in the spirit of the game overall, the larger picture, with the way referees are treated, as you just explained, how is it that from the NCAA through high schools at all levels, we aren't seeing a different approach to how coaches can behave? You know, you talked about, you know, at the outset of our conversation, how the really great players are able to take a situation and basically remember what their role is and move on quickly, right?
Mm-hmm.
Either on their own or with the help of a teammate. I'm curious, why do you think we haven't gotten that place yet with coaches? Why are they allowed to have the emotional response they are without consequence?
People are just fearful in general. And the coach, the head coach of a basketball team, is a very loud personality within sports culture. And I think people are scared of loud coaches. ADs don't address their coaches' behavior that happens on their school grounds. Principals don't address it. Superintendents don't build that culture of respect and sportsmanship. So there's a lot to this. You know, there really is. As I've done content and really looked deeply into the industry and this topic, you know, there's really a lot to it, and we could be on this for days. And just trying to play my part to improve it and build the officials up and raise awareness. All we can do is just keep going at this and raising awareness. But that's why a platform like Crown Refs, I think, is so effective too, because previous to this, we've had zero voice. It's been a one-way abuse for referees. So for me to be able to make a video where I show you the video and am able to commentate over that about a game I had and how the coach treated me, this is stuff no one really gets exposed to. So we just need to put it out there more. But also, coaches do need to be held accountable. I think it starts at that school, in that organization, in that league, like however level we're speaking about. But I don't like to use this word a lot, but the treatment towards officials from coaches, generally speaking, is horrible. And I consider myself a very emotionally strong and stable person, and I can take my lumps in this, and I have. Last week, I had a rough, I wouldn't say it's a week, I had a rough day due to maybe, you know, combination of what happened at work and then going to ref in a game. And here's what happened, and I'll speak about this. As the game ended, the winning coach won by 2 points. As the game ended, I'm walking through the exits. The coach starts shouting my name. That's crazy, Paul. That's ridiculous, Paul. So we continued into the exits. Now, I want to stay here for a second. By rule, I should have stopped, blew my whistle 10 times. I should have given him a technical foul because we're still within the visual confines of the playing area. I should have brought everybody back onto the court. I should have lined the home team up for 2 shots with the chance to put the game into overtime. I failed to have the courage in that moment to do that, as has every other official in the history of reffing, probably in my spot, due to the fear factor of making that move and the friction, the initial friction that would be in it, right? You know, that's a gutsy call, but that's what should have happened. Anyway, fast forward. I didn't get it done. We kept going because this way was home, right? So we always just go home and clock out.
That's safe.
It's safe. It's the road more traveled. So I get into the locker room, the winning coach, I hear him again shouting my name. That's crazy, Paul. That's ridiculous, Paul. Through the doors. Wow. I'm like, okay. So I wait. My crew, we leave. Guess who's outside the locker room in the hallway with his assistant coach, with his phone. Now, I don't know what he was doing with his phone. He could have been checking a text from his wife. I don't know. I'm not going to judge. But it appeared to me he was making a gesture insinuating that I got a call wrong or something. I said, you're being disrespectful. I said, you're being unprofessional. You won the game. And then he makes a personal comment about Crown Refs. And he goes, you just do this for the blog. All you do is lecture coaches. You just do this for the blog. And he's talking to me as I'm leaving. I'm saying, good night. So that interaction should have never even happened. The school should have been escorting us out. Never should have crossed paths. You see how this is a very loaded situation? Cool. So anyway, let's continue with the story. I call my assigner. Because I'm going to be first on this. He had the last words there. Now it's time to put it in writing, right? So I let the assigner know exactly what happened. We created a report about what happened, documenting every detail I just gave you. And the assigner sent it to the league. And the league commissioner, as of now, has just responded about the lack of a technical foul. It was just like, so he should have given him a technical foul to end the game. She didn't address the other thing. I'm still waiting to hear, so maybe they will. But just to kind of give you the full slate from on the court to then in the locker room to then what happens after, and this is on the NCAA level. So you can imagine what's going to happen on the lower levels in that private gym where nobody is watching and is going to say anything. So this is everywhere happening. What do you think?
Well, I think it's a good example of some sort of, first of all, misguided assumption about, you know, how a coach can influence the game, you know, in the right direction. Secondly, I think it's kind of missing the point. The guy won. The guy's team won, right? And, you know, I think in the spirit of what you said earlier about respect and generally, you know, pursuing the interests of the game, you know, how else could that conversation have gone? I'm wondering in my mind, you know, what would a coach expect to be the end of that conversation that would resolve in any sort of satisfying way, where it's not just good for the coach, but it's also, you know, fair and, you know, equally respectful to the referee. I just don't see that end game. What occurred to me when you were telling that story too was the role that parents play in this. And what's interesting to me is when I do a team exercise with players and we go through, okay, what's the team's identity? What are our core values? And how will we know we're living by them? And there's always a conversation about referees because there's kind of a pre-mortem. Like, okay, so these are our values, right? What will happen when a call gets made against us? What will happen when we're behind 10 in a game we should be winning, we think in our mind, and other scenarios? But one of the questions we also ask is, okay, what do you want and don't want from your parents? So the usual things that they want are love, respect, support, excitement for whatever happens, regardless. What we don't want is arguing with the refs, questioning the coach, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yet all these things happen. And I feel bad for the kids because you hear what's going on, you know, behind you when you're sitting on the bench from the parents, from fans. And I think it really, really is tough for the players because it doesn't make them perform better. It makes maybe the person feel good that they're venting that emotion. And I think that's a key thing too, is that it's natural to have emotional response. And the question is, where do you direct the response? Are you better off shouting to the wall or the empty bleachers just to get it off your chest and feel better? Or is it taking to the referee? I'm not sure the latter is the one that makes sense.
And it's important having healthy emotional responses to when things don't go your way. And that's why I'm speaking from the perspective of here's the things I do not like: complaining, blaming, not taking accountability for your own actions.
Yep.
You know, and I think the game is such a gift too. Like, this is such a privilege, right? This is a privilege. This should be fun. If this is not fun, you're not doing the right thing.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, to me, you know, basketball and every sport is this marvelous learning lab of teaming and leadership, that these are potential life lessons, right? I mean, where else do any of us get as many repetitions in rapid fire succession as in sport? Okay, we're going to go prepare, we're going to learn, and then we're going to go put ourselves out there and see how we're doing. We're going to have a game. And then we'll come back and we'll evaluate performance as referees, coaches, players. And we'll start another cycle. Okay, and how did we do technically? How did we perform as a team? You know, how together? How much sense of belonging did we create? And then we're going to go another cycle. Businesses don't operate that fast in terms of their cycle times of plan, execute, review, replan, plan, execute, review. Sport is unique in that way. And the only thing we can do is mess it up if we don't allow it to happen in a way that really works for all the players involved. You know, the refs aren't the enemies of the players and the coaches, but it can easily be positioned that way if they see it as somehow unfair. But that's not the right response. We're all in this together. If we don't have refs, we got a pickup game. And that's a whole different dynamic for the team, the players, the coach, and the community. And I think this is the other thing that parents easily forget is sport is a great community building thing. I mean, think about it. You know, these communities having high school games playing against each other or town teams playing against each other. You know, my town is going to play and I'm going to go watch my team because I believe in my team, my town. We got to take care of it.
Yeah, this is the game we love, and it would be nice if we could get rid of that adversarial relationship towards refs. You know, sometimes players and coaches, they look at me like I'm their opponent or something. You know, and this could be helpful too, is focus on your role in the game. There's four roles in the game. I don't know if you've heard this, but I've covered it, and I think we should all spread this out. And it's foundational, and it's so basic. You know, the coach's role is to coach his players and to be a positive leader for his players and his team. The player's job is to play hard all game and get through the ups and downs of the game, being a good teammate. The referee's job is to ensure safety and fairness and do the best job they can to be accurate and call the game correctly. The fans and spectators' job is to be a positive influence on their team and cheer for their team and uplift and empower their team. So if we can all focus on our role in the game, and that could be helpful in when a player's driving the lane and gets bumped and misses the call, but he remembers stick to my role in the game, and he doesn't look at the ref, and that information, stick to my role in the game, motivates him to instantly run back and get a steal.
Right. Yeah, there's a mental technique called step out or step back, step up, and step in. So something goes against me, I'm going to step back. I'm going to take a breath or do whatever my strategy is to deal with that immediately. And then I'm going to step up. I'm going to look wider than just my own head and disappointment or reaction. Where do I need to be in the game? As you say, next play, right? Where do I need to be in the game? Where does my team need me? And so part of what we talk about is, you know, how does my team need me? Not just my reaction. And then finally, you know, step in. So take positive action. have the conversation with the rest of the team while we're waiting for the shooter to get lined up at the free throw line. Or if there is a timeout or a stoppage of play or an injury, let's get back together, talk about our techniques and tactics, or let's get emotions back to the right level where they need to be. And I think I love that idea of you know, everybody playing their role. We talk about what's your job here? You know, the job of the parents and the fans is to bring positive outside energy, right? Because I ask players all the time, what difference does it make if the guys on the bench or the fans in the stands are behind you? And everyone tells me it's everything. It's absolutely everything, right? I feel it. I get energized. I get a new, you know, I get a fresh set of wheels or whatever. They have different ways of describing it, right? So the question is, can we coach the fans and the parents on how to do that well also, so they can, you know, bring energy to the team too? And there's great research that supports that, by the way, that even within player roles, there are different jobs to be done. It's, you know, be the coach on the court. There's manage emotions. There's keep people together off the court. And the fourth one is actually being a liaison or a diplomat to the outside, because you can take a very proactive role that's shown to be really, really positive for the team in engaging those outside stakeholders. So I love the way you laid that out. And I think, you know, the cool thing is the research bears it out too, that works. That's how performance, belonging, well-being, those things happen when you do those things well. All right, so how can we do it better? You know, this is a big task. This is a big problem to attack, right? Is it simply just focusing on the basics, Paul? As you said, have everybody figure out their role, remember their role, execute their roles well? Or are there certain things you're seeing as you look across, you know, the Crown Refs community, you know, of things that you know, especially coaches and players can do to, you know, to really improve the game?
The question is, are there certain things coaches and players can continue to do to improve the game from an officiating perspective?
Yes.
You know, information, right? Learning, education. So hopefully we are providing some of those channels to get to the coaches and the players and educate them on these little nuances of the game. But it also has to, they have to want it. They have to be self-aware, understand that maybe this is something that they need to improve in. This has a lot to do with off the court mindset and mentality way before we even get into a sports environment too. And but I would just say, continuing to find resources and information out there, continue to be exposed to the right way of doing it. Like, so for instance, if I could get mic'd up in a game and have an interaction recorded of a player coming up to me, hey ref, could you tell me what I did wrong, you know, on that last play? Or what was your perspective? And for 47,000 people on TikTok to be able to see that interaction, you know, and one by one by one by one by one by one, just education. You know, that's
international rugby is very much like that, right? Because the lead ref is mic'd up. And what's interesting though is the conversations are very short. It's, hey, I wanted to let you know, here's what the ruling was, here's why, and here's what the penalty is going to be, or here's the consequence, here's the decision. And generally, you don't see much argument. I think there's maybe a different mentality in that game, a different ethic in that game. But I think I've been really impressed by all the international matches I've seen where the ref is mic'd up. By the way, I think that would be an amazing thing at pro and NCAA level to make it more interesting for the fans. If it could happen, that'd be a whole nother dimension to the game.
Sure. Yeah, that league you mentioned, that they're world class as far as their respect for the game, their respect for the referees, And this, you know, this is also something I say, respect yourself. You know, how are you behaving?
Yeah.
You know, so for a coach to just scream at a referee, like, would you ever scream at someone in public? Would you ever scream like that at your job? So, like, are you aware of how you're acting and behaving? I see a lot of veteran coaches that are very successful off the court and whatever they do. It could be a pastor, it could be a doctor or whatever. And, you know, just to see the way they behave in the sports environment, I don't think it's okay. And I think we need to stop making excuses like, oh, I'm passionate. Because you're assuming I'm not passionate. And you're also making an excuse that passion is a way. Actually, not making an excuse. You need to differentiate between passion and disrespect. Right? So that gets back to awareness. Do you know how you're behaving? Do you know how you're communicating? You know, do I have to explain a technical foul to an adult, to a coach? Like, why would, just think about that. First of all, you need to know the rules of the game. There's six things you know, you can't do as a coach to get a bench. You would get a bench technical class A on sporting tech. Rising up, you know, with a demonstrative reaction, throwing your arms up, waving off the ref, trying to influence their decisions. You know, so there's certain things you need to know. But I forget where I was going right before I laid down the rules. Could you reframe?
Well, it was about understanding that, you know, in the game, often we exhibit behaviors as a coach that we might not do in any other walk of life. You know, we talk about that in terms of identities. I have an identity as a father, a brother, sister, son, daughter, referee, coach, player, parent. Right. And as I step into each of those roles, there's a different set of rules and expectations that go with what it means to be that job. And I think what's really tough for players to learn the right behaviors. And, you know, with what you were talking about, I distinguish between adjectives and verbs. So an adjective like respectful. Well, what are the verbs that go with that? In other words, what are the behaviors and actions? Right. And so to be passionate, okay, I can be passionate. What behaviors are acceptable under passionate?
Very good.
And what behaviors are not acceptable? Can we get clear on that? I think what a lot of coaches fail to do is to remember their role as prototypes. In every team, we look to the leaders to be prototypes. In other words, what does it mean to be one of us? You should be able to look at any team member, any coach, whether the head coach or any assistant, and say, look at their behavior. Look at what they're doing. That's who we are. That's consistent with what it means to be one of us. Now, we each have different jobs within the team, but we should be able to say, okay, yeah, that's a prototype. That's who we are. And there's a difference between being passionate like, I'm a Marquette grad and season ticket holder. Shaka Smart's all over the court, super enthusiastic. But I don't generally see him being particularly disrespectful to referees. I think he'll lobby his case and, you know, do what a high level, you know, NCAA coach will do. But I see him being just a fierce role model for what it means to be one of us. You know, we fight with intensity and it shows up in every one of us, right? On the court. And it's infectious when you watch a guy like that working up and down the court. So absolutely. Who are the role models? Who are the prototypes? And I think, you know, it's fair to ask a coach, an athletic director to say, okay, yeah, that's our number one job because we're the face of the program.
Yeah, it starts at the top and it all trickles down.
Right. Yeah, it's pretty hard to say, I know I do that, but do something different. That's really, really hard to expect, especially kids to do. We're imitating critters. We are, you know, we're not rule followers necessarily. We imitate those around us. So I think, you know, that, by the way, that gets to, I think, the value of the work you're doing too, is, you know, you're asking refs to model behavior of being professional, being courteous, listening well, right? Not being necessarily a dictator of the game, but setting clear rules about, hey, here's my job and here's how I'm going to do my job. And here's what you can't do because this gets in the way of me doing my job. So I think that's a real positive in some of the work I'm seeing you doing. So, I wish there were more doing that because it's infectious. It's good stuff.
Thanks a lot, man. Appreciate your support. It's been fun. It's been fun going back and forth with you today. I think this also will be helpful as a podcast. I know people are probably enjoying listening right now. So I appreciate your contributions to this and Crown Refs. So
Yeah, I loved our conversation, Paul. I really appreciate the time on a Sunday. Continue to wish you the best, and I'll look forward to all the good stuff coming down the pike.
appreciate it. Keep me posted too. Anything else you need and how I can help as you develop the book and put it out, I'd be happy to share it too as well.
That's awesome. I appreciate that. Yeah, one of the things we really want to do is, as we come up with the ideas, we want to field test them, right? And that's part of reason for this conversation is here's what we're thinking. Here's what we've done it ourselves or what we would observe. How do you view it? What would you do differently? How would you adjust it? So we'll keep doing that. So I appreciate the offer.
And when are you looking to publish?
We haven't set a date. We're just on a writing schedule where we'll write, we'll say, okay, we're dividing up the topics. I picked the referee topic partly because of some things I'm working on with some clients, so that had a immediate interest. I'm guessing it's going to be about 6 months to put it out, but hopefully it could happen faster. But we've got a number of chapters we want to definitely write. And then, what's interesting, what we're finding is, for example, as we're writing, we realize, oh, it would be good to reference something else that we haven't talked about yet. So we got to have somebody write that chapter so that we can say, okay, here's this idea of how to, let's say, manage your mental state in this situation. Okay, now we could apply it to referees or what happens when you're behind or you're in the middle of a losing streak. So, kind of what are the tools? And then here are the different ways of applying it. So, long answer to your question about when, but that's kind of the process. So, but I'll keep you posted, Paul.
Love it. And I just want to leave everybody listening with this last thing. Mistakes are good. We need to reframe how we perceive errors and things going your way and disappointment. Like, if you can just look at it as you're learning, you're getting better, and you're going to use this experience to continuously improve, it's just a shift of the perspective. Mistakes are good.
Love it.
Have a great day.
Thanks, Paul. Be well.
Thank you for listening to the Crown Refs Podcast. Serve the game.
All right, Johnny Gleese reaching out. We're going knee tucks. Comfortable feel. Easy to put on. In the locker room before a game, I'll hang my shirt up, put them on the shirt. Once you pop your shirt on, after you're done with stretching and warming up, they clip real quick. You can have a little slide band to tighten them up and down. I like to go tight, just like a sneaker. When you lace your shoes up, you like it tight. It's going to loosen up after the game goes, as you run, as your muscles flex. And they never ride up. I've had good success with these, keeping my shirt in. When you're at the free throw line, watching the game, you don't want to be messing with your pants. Knee tucks are, the way that helps us to not do that.